The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. We're open line through till 1 today. So text, call, email and WhatsApp. Text 166177. WhatsApp on the same number, but you'll need to put 07624 in front of that. Make us one of your contacts. Email studio at maxradio.com. Call 661368. Lots of messages we didn't get to yesterday. Lots of comment. Just a quick one now. We all have cash flow problems, so we have to spend wisely. A certain supermarket selling 4 cans of Carlsberg Export for £5.80, £1.45 per pint, says Terry Kay. So really, how can hospitality venues compete really at that price? I just wonder what your thoughts are. Where that's concerned. But certainly lots and lots of hospitality venues, they say, are going to face closure. This is Andy Saunders. We mentioned this yesterday. Up to a third of hospitality businesses on the island, up to a third of about 100. So 33, 34, 35 hospitality venues were a third of those 100 that were there could go within 6 to 12 months, according to the LVA rep at Andy Saunders. Another meeting with government is planned for today, and this is Andy Saunders talking about, well, really, what the situation is and why it's needed.
They don't only have to listen, they have to act. And to be fair to them, they have agreed to meet us again tomorrow, and we've been out today preparing for that. But some of the presentations they're putting up across in the press and so on don't really fairly reflect where we're coming from as an organisation and the sector. Most of our ideas around support are based around keeping money in people's pockets on the Isle of Man, and to keep more of the small businesses' profits, or not even profits, but earnings, in their companies so that they can spend, rather than going to cover some of the government's own problems and expenditure.
So do you believe there's a genuine attempt to find ways of supporting the industry from government, or are you suspicious that they're just paying lip service in some respects to you?
I genuinely feel that there are lots and lots of people in government that understand where the problems of this island are at, and how, not only for small businesses and but also for our people, how they need to make changes to support that. Do I think everybody in government is of that mindset? Unfortunately not.
Now, given what many local hospitality businesses are saying, it's fair to suggest that they need help sooner rather than later. Otherwise, there could be something of a bloodbath in the sector.
If we went to the meeting on Monday, there were over 100 businesses represented, and there is a definite threat in the short term, and by the short term we mean 6 to 12 months, of a third of those businesses not being able to function anymore.
Now, the Enterprise Minister's promised to come up with a plan for a way forward by the end of May in the House of Keys. He was told that would be too late. Is that what you're saying?
There will certainly be businesses that won't be around at the end of this month, indeed.
Now, there have been calls for a VAT reduction, for instance. Is that realistically enough, though?
There are lots of different calls. The things that we want to make really clear is, first of all, we're not campaigning just for hospitality. We're campaigning for all of the Isle of Man small businesses who have been put under a strain caused by the Isle of Man government's issues. Now, they've called for us to be sustainable, affordable and fair. We'd ask them to look at their own policies and make sure that their rises are sustainable, affordable,
what do you
and fair.
What do you think we need to do about this? That's Andy Saunders from the LVA. And that other meeting is taking place today with the government. A message in from Kenny, who just said, there is an elephant in the room here, Andy, and that is they're talking about small businesses, small hospitality businesses, but we do have one big hospitality business on the Isle of Man, the company that owns, what is it, about a dozen, maybe more pubs, and 20, something like 20 spa shops that sell food and drink, and that is the brewery. So Kenny said, really, do we want to be supporting the brewery? The brewery is a massive business. We'll always look after its own business. And if you're going to help small businesses, will we end up putting money into the pocket of Heron and Brearley? Because they are a big, big company. And really, says Kenny, do they really need help from the public regarding this? So should the government target maybe businesses with a smaller turnover, maybe smaller headcount, smaller personnel? Is that the way to do it? Or should we really be funding one of the biggest hospitality business on the Isle of Man? Maybe we'll put that question to the brewery just to see if they've got any thoughts on this. Here's a note in from Eugene, who says, is it me or have you noticed this as well? What's that, Eugene? He tells me there's a white van on Douglas Head Road that seems to have been there for months. It's got moss all over the top, and I saw some people yesterday trying to get it open. It starts KMN. It's a white van there. And if you're heading, I've noticed this van, and it seems to be there all the time, and yet the parking controllers don't seem to be making an easy pinch with this. It's 2-hour parking where it is. And it seems to be, well, maybe they'll do it now. Maybe it's somebody who's just parking very cleverly. You never know. The Manx residents can't be expected to prop up failing hospitality businesses. Our government is for all workers. Why don't they reduce the employer's NI payments? That'll help. The planning board could help by stop putting gyms and leisure facilities out in no man's lands like industrial estates. What about retail? What about small businesses with high rates and high rent? Are the government going to be helping all of those? Think of everybody, please, says Texter 382. The failure, this is 004 text, who just says, the failure for smaller food eateries, in my eyes, is down to their own demise, quietly simply due to the fact there are too many eateries opening up right in the middle of a town, which is inundated with established eateries. Take Ramsey's Main Street, for example. We're overrun with cafes and restaurants, never mind the pubs trying to survive, yet still more open up shop and wonder why they can't make a decent living out of it and then complain that they have to close. The well-established businesses offering meals and takeaway already know that the winter months are quiet, so they adjust their takings throughout the warmer months to see them through the year. And the quietest times, very shortly in Ramsey, we're going to have in the Main Street, all we're going to have in the Main Street is either places trying to sell us food or charity shops. Barbary Coast is shortly to open a food outlet in Ramsey, so that is another one coming. What about that horrible camper that's outside Laxey Health Centre, says Dave. How long's it been there for, Dave? 431. The Manx government surely needs to legalise cannabis. It'll make the Isle of Man a fortune and will help with the island's debts. In what way, Frank? In what way? That's a very broad brush statement. Legalise what? Recreational cannabis? Medicinal cannabis? Who's going to sell it, Frank? Is it going to be health food shops? Is it going to be what we used to call tobacconists? Or is it going to be pharmacies? Who is going to sell it? Just some common sense kind of grassroots, granular detail. Legalising cannabis is a very bold statement. What do you really mean? The spa shop franchise is supposed to be for families to run, not a big company to use as a cash cow, says Dan. Well, the brewery has got 20-odd of these shops, seem to be very popular, seem to be doing well, and they are open. I think the company's called Man in Retail, isn't it? And they have some petrol stations allied to some of them. So they are all over the Isle of Man. The spa shops are everywhere. I think it's a Dutch multiple, isn't it, spa? It's a Dutch kind of cooperative type thing. So just going back to this thought by Kenny, if we're going to give money to hospitality, will we end up shoveling money into the pockets of a very big company, Heron and Brayley, the brewery? They own big companies, transport companies and things like that. So really, Kenny's just saying, should the brewery be shouldering their own responsibility where this is concerned? I agree with Kenny. Says James, the brewery do nothing to help their pubs. Andy Saunders tries his hardest with live music and entertainment. Hardworking guy in comparison to the landlords at the brewery. Well, they take their wages. Not saying they don't work hard, but they take their wage. And of course, I'm sure they're probably under some sort of incentive with the brewery, but we don't know. I don't think that any of them deserve any assistance, says James. Also with the Sefton Group. Really, if we're going to give money to hospitality, will we end up giving it to big companies as opposed to the small companies who are used to fending for themselves? It's on UK plates, is it? 431, that's the one outside Laxey Health Centre. There's Frank here again. I think we need to do coffee bars like they do in Amsterdam. It makes the cannabis a lot safer and cleaner. Thank you, Frank. 807. I'm not saying it's the real word or it's the official word or it's the definitive word, but I saw a program on television recently that said that the residents of Amsterdam, the real Amsterdammers, absolutely loathe the cannabis trade because all it does is attract drug users. The cannabis tourism, a lot of those people, they were the people that were spoken to in the TV show, they absolutely loathe Amsterdam, city of culture, city of artists, city of music, historical city. They hate the idea that it's now known as Spliff City. Text, email, call and WhatsApp now. I was really interested to hear this morning. They were talking on the breakfast show about wind turbines. Manx Utilities continues to study the ecological impact of wind farms on the island. Environmental concern about the wind turbine blades is being raised. Now, the chief exec of Exotechnologies, a company on the island that works with sustainable and recyclable material, believes there are other solutions the authority can use with the introduction of turbine blades, other solutions which are BPA-free. Jaron Watts talks about the ecological survey reports by Manx Utilities, and he says they're incomplete as it doesn't show the side effects of the blade on the environment.
What do we do at the end of life with these turbine blades? We cannot bury them in our hills. They contain boric acids, they contain other bad materials, cobalt, salts, styrenes, BPAs, and so on. But one of the side effects, and that's something which popped up, is leading edge erosion. It's a headbreaker of the industry. These turbines, they lose their performance because the shape of these leading edge part of the blade is causing less performance of the blade. And so we take a wind turbine, let's say with a diameter about 130 meters. One blade is about 60 tons, and 700 kilograms of this 60 tons is exposed to leading edge erosion. 62 kilograms per turbine contains nanoplastic, which is spread over our lands and reservoirs and sea. So that's about, if we do 5 wind turbines here, 310 kilograms per year of nanoplastics, which will be eaten by livestock, which ends in our reservoirs. If these figures are right, it's very likely. There's no still scientific report about it. But when you just bear in mind that in the resins of these turbines, so you have resins and fibers, it contains BPA, which is bisphenol A, and that's a scientific fact that 1 kilogram of this BPA can pollute 1 billion liter of water. To put that in perspective of the Isle of Man, put 1 kilogram in the reservoir of Ingebrek and it's polluted. In this 62 kilo per wind turbine, how much BPA in it, nobody actually knows.
How about that? That's the chief exec of this company, Exotechnologies, talking about wind turbine pollution. The stuff, these nanoplastics that come off that pollute. and his company. We'll find out more later on about that. And if you've got any thoughts on it, by all means, text, email, call, WhatsApp. Howard's on. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Andy. Just listen to what you were saying there before about the cannabis, etc., Spliff City, Amsterdam. I have read that myself, that the people over there find it objectionable that people are coming there primarily to smoke cannabis. I'm not a smoker myself. I'm not anti-smoke. My wife smokes. But, as I've just said to Howard, if Rishi Sunak gets his way, if his government is still there in the next 12 months, he's wanting to introduce a bill whereby people born after a certain date will not be able to buy cigarettes. So if that's the case, the spliff, if they legalise cannabis smoking, will become a form of cigarette, which, if that bill goes through for the inability to purchase them after a certain date, then it'll automatically put cannabis back on the black market.
So, I mean, I can't understand how. First of all, I can't understand how they're going to police the young people not buying cigarettes, because if they want to, if they can buy vapes now, and I mean, it's the same argument that was put forward. You remember with Alco-Pops 30 years
That's
ago?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're still available. Just come under a different name, as they say, same horse, just a different jockey. But yeah, that will automatically put it back into the black market. Same as cigarettes will. And people are going to smoke anyway. I was a smoker, I'll have to say that, but it's a long time ago. My wife smokes, and we're both, elderly. And there's no point my wife giving up smoking now. It's a good idea to prevent people taking up the habit, but I've just read in my paper, not fully, that the increase in people smoking since COVID has made the, what was there, a decrease in the number of people smoking. It's gone back up again,
right,
because people are working from home and they're actually smoking while they're home.
Yeah, I mean, when people talk about legalising cannabis on the Isle of Man, I mean, whether it's recreational cannabis or medicinal cannabis, for that matter, I just think we need a lot more detail about it. And I don't know. I mean, do you think the Isle of Man would ever take to being a recreational cannabis destination?
I very much hope not. Because you don't know who you're going to introduce. We don't know who's coming to the island now. And you only have to look at the number of hard drugs that's coming into the island. And if they're coming here on a recreational cannabis trip, pardon the pun, they could be bringing anything else in with them, because there's no checks, or very little. And the, you know, it's opening a Pandora's box. You don't know what's going to come in. We're better off as we are. At least we do have some form of knowledge of what's happening. And you can see it on a daily basis. But if you've got people, and if the government encourages this, you're going to get thousands of people possibly coming in, and it could be a disaster waiting to happen.
So, do you think this is kind of a genie in a bottle? If you let the genie out, you'll never be able to put it back in.
No, you never will, because it's one of these things that once you've opened it up, then there's no going back on it. You may be able to hide it, but you won't be able to get rid of it. But one of the other things you joined, just before I came on, that chap was talking about the wind turbine blades.
Yeah.
If you look at, propeller-driven aircraft, petrol or otherwise, they have to have their propellers checked, certificated, on a regular basis because of fair wear and tear on the edges of the blades. And, you know, this is on every propeller aircraft. And I've seen them, and they're like a grater, like a file, how they've corroded away, not corroded, eroded. And it's actually the edge, the leading edge of the propeller is gradually wearing away. So this is exactly what's going to happen to these large turbine blades. So they're quite correct in saying there'll be millions and millions of tiny pieces of plastic or resin flying about in the atmosphere. So we've already got that in the form, and you can check this yourself, or any of your listeners can check it, that this does cause, it's just air when they're going through the air and actually rotating fast, that it wears, it's a natural occurrence, and they have to change the propellers every few years because of this as a safety factor.
Okay, appreciate that, Howard. Thanks for being with us today.
Take care. Bye now.
Good to hear from you. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. And just the Isle of Man hospitality industry says it's on its knees and it's appealing to the government to listen. There's a planning application for a pop-up foodie village in St Ninian's Church grounds with up to 20 stalls serving food on site and also takeouts, chilli eating, cake decorating competition stalls. Will be getting their pitches at a very reasonable price, which presumably would enable them to do the food cheaply, to undercut Douglas city centre establishments who pay high rates and rent all year round. TT businesses probably enables some of these businesses to keep afloat throughout the year, and if they lose some of that, it could be the final downfall of their businesses. Also, they'll be in direct competition to the stalls behind the grandstand who pay a huge rent for those pitches, and they do. It's very, very big. It's DEFA, a government department who's backing this, and whereas it's admirable to support Manx produce, it should stay on North Quay, where they have some stalls for a Saturday, that being a business district, encouraging people into Douglas City Centre during TT and away from the grandstand stalls and hugely congested area around Nobles Park. Also, Douglas, the Department for Enterprise, is considering a grant. Also, this proposed foodie village is right next to an older person's apartments complex, so the noise, congestion, smells will be intolerable, says Margaret, for them. In addition, entertainment, including a brass band, is also proposed on the grass area, which is sandwiched between St Ninian's apartments and St Ninian's schools, where students will be taking GCSE examinations. So are you for it or against it, Margaret? Thanks for that. The survival of our hospitality industry. Manx Care's got limited money, yet they launch an ambulatory service to help A&E cope. Then A&E push people towards Ramsay. Mr. Hooper should be focusing on what is important. And perhaps if the government hadn't taken on an extra 1,350 employees, they'd better be in a better position to help the hospitality sector. At this rate, there won't be anywhere, restaurants and bars, for all those government workers to spend their fat salaries on. Don't think everybody's on a fat salary in government, but Emma, but anyway, point taken. And text to 475 says, Andy, look, I don't think legalising cannabis is a viable option given the propensity of the chief constable to arrest everybody with his zero tolerance approach and the willingness of the high bailiff to lock people up. No wonder the prison's full. And I suppose if they need more room, there'll always be early release of those prisoners not convicted of drugs. What do you think of the chief constable's approach? The chief constable is fairly unequivocal where this is concerned. He knows there's a problem with drugs. We all know there's a problem with drugs. But if you like, it's a fragmented problem. There is the use of drugs by people. There is the fact that criminality is involved, hence because it's not legal to do it. And there's also drug-related crime, the crime that goes with drug dealers falling out and the pyramid selling of drugs. It's a big pyramid sales operation. The man at the top finances it and gets the people underneath to do the selling and to get people involved. That's how it works. It's a bit like Amway or Tupperware, but with drugs. And if you sell Tupperware, only joking. But you get the point. So when people buy those drugs, they are entering a criminal world. It may be at arm's length. It may be with a velvet glove on, but they are in a criminal world. And hence the chief constable is fully entitled to get involved. But making recreational drugs legal on the Isle of Man, recreational cannabis. And as Howard said, if they're going to be banning 16-year-olds from buying cigarettes, where are they going to get this from? Bonzo's on. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello. Yes, I was seeing earlier today about Mr. Wes, is it? And his comments about wind turbine blade erosion, and also comments from other people about it. As you may have seen, I don't know, on your Manx Radio Facebook feed. On the Facebook feed. A chap called Keith Jones was responding to a guy called Chris Walker, who was supporting this idea about, you know, BPA pollution from wind turbine blade erosion. And Keith Jones writes, having been involved in the repair and maintenance of aviation composite structures for over 30 years, I find your assertion that the blades erode laughable. I have yet to see a properly constructed composite structure erode. If you are telling us the blades are faulty in construction, that is an entirely different matter. An associated company has marine turbines in the East River of New York. These are 20 years into a 30-year fatigue life and are showing no problems whilst operating 23.5 hours a day in a far harsher environment than wind turbines. Most of the anti-turbine argument I have seen on these pages has little basis in fact, and in my opinion is mostly NIMBYs clutching at straws. There are other papers as well. Now, I believe that a lot of the source of this thing about BPA was from a paper called, from some Norwegians calling themselves the Turbine Group. However, that paper, which I think is from 2021, has not been peer-reviewed. It is not a proper scientific paper, and it really does not stand up to any proper scrutiny whatsoever. But here we go again, where the assertions of some people are being broadcast by Manx Radio as fact, when they are nothing of the sort. And basic fact-checking by the newsroom would have put this, would have brought this out. This is just disinformation. And like the disinformation that spent a year, over a year, advocating geothermal, day after day after day after day, when any informed person could see that it was a complete non-starter. And then the cheerleader for geothermal, Graham Fox-Hume, and his chums, there was an entire Man in Line program, I think, devoted to them pushing this stuff. And then, of course, in the past few months, he actually met the person who is the actual expert on it, Dr. David Quirk, not just simply someone like Graham Fox-Hume, who used to drill oil wells. And after meeting that, he was forced to admit that geothermal was absolutely a non-starter. I haven't heard Julian or Eddie or others retracting their post, their stand on geothermal for that. So, no, it was completely wrong. It was just a load of rubbish that we found out from the internet. But we paraded our opinion as fact when it was nothing of the sort. Now, I think really Manx Radio need to be rather more careful about this, to be honest. And some fact-checking about what people are putting out as statements of fact on your news website and in interviews need to be verified.
We need to find out the truth, though, don't we, Bonzo?
Well, that is the truth. I know there's these modern ideas of, well, Trumpist right-wing conspiracy theories, nutjob ideas of alternative facts. But the alternative facts which they so readily use, like the ones for geothermal, don't stand up because they're not facts. They're opinions. They're opinions used to, disinformation used to try and discredit those who are actually trying to do something. Like the climate scientists at UEA, who were University of East Anglia, who were the subject for years of a smear and disinformation campaign by fossil fuel interests and right-wing interests. So I think there really does have to be some proper consideration and proper expression of the facts of the matter. I mean, MUA seem to be, and others, myself included, talk about these things, and we've been talking about them for years and having to repeat ourselves again and again and again. But the first, I've looked at something on the internet and it says this, you have to prove to me again and again and again that the world is round, it's nonsense. And really, Max Radio ought not to participate in assisting it.
Well, I think we'll certainly find people with opinions, and if people come forward with opinions, we'd be errant in our ways. We'd be wrong to try and suppress people's opinions. And Man in Line's about opinion, and people will make their own mind up.
Well, people are perfectly at liberty to put their own opinions. What they're not at liberty to do is then continually parade them as fact. Some other presenters, when you're not on the show, do actually challenge people on this. And they are, such people are often found wanting. The idea that, I should be able to say anything I want, and it can be as fantastical as anything, but the minute anyone actually comes out with the contrary statement of reality, somehow they have to prove reality to them in order to... This false equivalence, which has grown up over the years, the kind of false equivalence that people like Trump and people like the right wing of the Conservative Party in the UK have used greatly to their advantage to spread disinformation.
Well, quite what Donald Trump's got to do with the Isle of Man, I don't know, but, I mean, I see your point.
Well, Donald Trump is the primary example of how to use disinformation to get what you want and advance your own opinion. I mean, at the moment, 40% of the American electorate believe that the electorate was stolen, that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, which is absolute nonsense. So I think, verification and objective analysis of these things really need to be the order of the day, and not simply accepting, Eddie's facts or whatever as facts, because they're not.
Okay, right. Well, we now you've had your say. That's perfectly as it is.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling today. Cannabis coffee shops, then the food restaurants should make a fortune in sales when they get the munchies, says 531. I know that is, but do you really think that recreational cannabis is the way to go forward on the Isle of Man? Unbelievable. When things go wrong, it's always the government's fault. Take responsibility for your own behaviour, your own problems. The people of the Isle of Man are trying to manage bills, food and other commitments before being able to fund hospitality, says Marina. Grow up and take some responsibility. Can the people who have their 7-metre-plus motorhomes parked up on Laxey Promenade for weeks just to advertise them for sale, please remove them? You ruin it for those that might come down for a day or a single overnight stay, says Alex. Are there many of those? Thank you to all the people who are sending me lots of photos of old wind turbine blades, saying, quite where do we put them? Don't ask me. Amsterdam coffee shops provide a tobacco-free mix for those making joints, and tobacco is not generally allowed in coffee shops. So you can smoke cannabis, but you can't smoke tobacco in coffee shops. Been this way for years. There are already large numbers of recreational cannabis users on the Isle of Man who get regular large amounts of cannabis via prescription, with a simple excuse like stress or being unable to sleep, says Steve, and also thanks for that. I'm more concerned with the weight of the blades on the turbines. 60 tons per blade, says Pete. And thanks also to the people who, when I was yesterday talking about the route that the turbine blades are going to take from Douglas to Eriestain, if you go to maxradio.com, we've got the actual map on the website. Go to maxradio.com, click on news, go through the news stories, and the map is there. And Stephen's on now. Hi, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, listeners. I wonder, these aren't facts. They're researched and found on the internet. So if I could just say a few, some of my opinions about what could be done to help the hospitality trade without incurring the wrath of the general population, some of whom seem to take the attitude of the devil may care. I don't, because I think the hospitality trade is essential to enjoying life on the island. So some things, if you look at the financial assistance scheme of the government's own scheme, and they are suggesting, well, not suggesting, it's written down, there's a range of businesses that can be helped to start up here and get grant assistance for new employees and NI holidays, etc., etc. But interestingly, at the bottom of this particular page, it gives the exclusions, and the exclusions are, is basically the hospitality trade, pubs, cafes, restaurants, which I do think is not looking at the great bigger picture of what the island wants and wants to offer. So why would you come here if largely it was a desert at night time or weekends, and your ability to go out and enjoy what the island has to offer, but without hospitality, it would be a very dull place, I would have thought. Now, if we go back a few years to the steam packet, when the steam packet was a company, that company did make some offers within its bid to be awarded the sea service agreement, or the user agreement that I remember it as, and part of that was to offer special offers. And I do feel that the steam packet, as it is owned by the government or the taxpayer, and with it as the shareholder, is able to exercise a direction to the board if they so desired. And I do believe that one of the simplest ways that everybody could support would be introducing special offers and better prices to encourage more visitors. I do think more tourists, both within the season and out of the season, would solve some of the problems for the hospitality trade, because then they would get more people here to spread the costs over of the problems that they're having. And Andy, interestingly enough, today, I think it's been reported on the BBC News, not reported Manx Radio yet, possibly, but I think you're all together. And the Department Enterprise Minister, Tim Johnson, has said, giving evidence to a 10-Timbrel committee on the Sea Services Agreement, says that schedules were relatively underutilized with an average yield of 40% across the year. He says if the ferry firm changed its purely profit approach to focus on better utilization of freight service and increased customers, the island and the company could both benefit. Now that, to me, it's welcome news, but it's strange, because surely to goodness, that approach should be coming out of Comin. And if the Enterprise Minister feels the only way he can make that case is via this committee, then we've got big problems within our government of what policies they want to follow and how best they can help the island people and hospitality. And I feel that this should warrant greater discussion, possibly by questions by MHKs. Both Comin should be looking at this and saying to the Treasury Minister, if we are to help hospitality, then special offer fares to attract more visitors to the island has to be part of the solution. And I'm astounded that hasn't been done. And the only way we have found out that the the Enterprise Minister also feels concerned as he's made this particular example to the to this committee. So I'm astounded, Andy. I find it really bizarre, and I do also think it's a case of some businesses we want to support and others we don't.
Okay, Stephen, I appreciate those points. Very well made. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. It's 14 minutes before one.
From our castles to our cottages, our museums, and the great Laxey Wheel. You'll find hidden treasures around every corner when you visit a Manx National Heritage site. Fill your summer making treasured memories with Manx National Heritage. Sites now open every day. By visiting, you help protect our treasured island for generations to come. Plan your visit today at manxnationalheritage.im.
Spring, a time for new beginnings and nature. This season, why not have a fresh start by switching your savings to Guernsey's Bank Skipton International and watch them grow? Skipton International offers a range of savings accounts, from fixed term to notice and easy access, enabling your savings to bloom for longer. So make this spring one to remember by switching to Skipton International today.
For details of all Skipton International savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
Life isn't always easy, and we can sometimes feel we're totally alone in our struggles. From employment issues, housing benefit complications and relationship breakdowns to faulty goods and bad workmanship. But whatever hurdles you face, Manx Citizens Advice Service at Tie Rush and Port Erin is here to help you overcome them with free confidential support and advice and guidance on where to get the help you need. We're open each Friday from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. No appointment necessary. Alternatively, leave a message on 833976 or email scas@manx.net and one of our team will get back to you. Citizensadvice.im, here for you for life.
This evening at 6, you can join me, Marilyn Crellin, for Shack Lair.
It just shows how big a difference we can make by the actions that we take at home.
We cut twigs from the corn tree and made crosses, tied them with sewing thread and hung them behind the door to keep the witches and the fairies away.
They were making crosses and tying them to the cow's tail.
That's this evening at 6, Shack Lair with me, Marilyn Crellin, here on Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
11 minutes to one, and David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Andy, I wondered the other day there about what's coming to the summer now, where we'll have visitors coming across. What's happened to the Currocks up at Sulby there?
Oh, the camping site.
Do you remember the fella that said the government couldn't afford to put toilets in or something like that?
Yeah.
And he offered, didn't he? No problem at all. I'll send my unit up, which I'm not using, from Douglas to Sulby, and get it done.
It's all gone a bit quiet.
Well, yeah, and I just wonder whether people are still allowed to go up there. What are the regulations? Who's running it? And I did go this week, to Ramsey, because the mountain road was shut. I had to go to Ramsey Cottage for a check-up. And I went past Laxey. I couldn't believe the size of that camper van that's near the doctor's surgery, which is in a parking bay.
7 metres, 21 feet.
21 feet, it's huge. And I just wondered whether, surely under the Road Traffic Act or everywhere else, that must be classed as heavy goods and is not permissible. But I thought to myself, if I'm not going to get anywhere with these camper vans and the government's not going to do anything, why don't we do an exchange through the summer months so we could send ours, that's in Belgravia Road, to Laxey, and they can come here to Onken. But this is an absolute nightmare where we've got these old Talbot camper vans, probably worth about £5,000, £3,000 or whatever. They're just lying in streets with grass and stuff growing underneath them. We can't even actually sweep the streets anymore now.
Are they contravening any law, David?
Well, I've tried to get backwards and forwards. There was some hope with the police, but it's dried up. But I think there's another trail coming along. I know our MHK Rob Collister has asked a particular question in the DOI, and we just need the DOI. And I'm just digressing slightly. I met Bruce Hanney this morning, and I said to Bruce Hanney, we miss you because at least you made a decision. And nobody ever crossed Bruce. When Bruce said, get that sorted, or get this sorted, get that road done, it was done. Which brought to my mind, Andy, should we go back to the area gangers? You know, the area bosses, which looked after north, south, east and west.
Yeah.
And they looked after their own area and took some pride in it. And I think that's what we lost.
All right. Thanks for calling, David. Appreciate that.
Don't forget, we can swap ours.
Yeah, swap the camper vans around. Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Yeah.
A couple of things. If there's no such thing as blade erosion, there's a company in the UK called Dangle, and they're the specialist company that go down the front of these wind turbine blades, re-epoxying them. They've been finding that wind turbine blades are losing between 1 and 5% of their power generation per year.
Okay, now, do you know this for fact? I'm asking you, do you know this for fact? Because we have to do that nowadays.
Well, the easiest thing to do, if anybody goes on onropes.co.uk, go into services, have a look at wind turbines, and then you'll see that they say prevention is better than cure. This undoubtedly applies to wind farm maintenance. Wind turbines have an average lifespan of 15 years, but the lifespan of surface coatings may be much less. So I'm just reporting on this website, which is called onropes.co.uk, registered UK company. They specialise in resurfacing the blade edges. Also, Vestas' own website, I shall quote directly from their statement, leading edge erosion of wind turbine blades is a high priority topic for the wind industry. Well, that's Vestas, the largest wind turbine manufacturer in the world, saying that on their own website. So, I don't know. I'm just quoting from the horse's mouth.
You see, there are hundreds of these darn things everywhere. You're all over Germany, go down to southern Spain. They're everywhere in the mountain ranges and the hills. And there doesn't seem to be. And we all know the danger of microplastics. We all know the danger of these tiny pieces of, microplastics, I think, is what, less than 5 millimeters in length. So if we've had these wind turbines for, 20, 30-odd years and more, why hasn't anything gone badly wrong?
I don't know. What's the incidence of cancers in the last 15 to 20 years since they were brought in?
Well, nobody's done specific research into that. But, you know, with all the wind turbines that are here, there and everywhere, nothing has been said. Now, you know, it could be, as you say, nobody's researched into it, but there doesn't seem to be a sort of howl of protest for, you know, things flaking off from these wind turbines.
Well, no, because they're invisible, because they're so small, you can't see them. You know, there's talk about things coming out of aircraft known as chemtrails, and, you know, the research out there, some people are saying, they're seeing large amounts of things like boron, which they've never seen before in the soil, and they're wondering, I wonder how that got in there. So you have to wonder what is invisible to us, but I don't know. But, you know, if we're talking about, they were mentioning about bisphenol A, which is the carcinogen in the epoxy.
Yeah.
They talk about having perhaps in the future a BPA-free one, but we banned straws and bags, and they don't have BPA in them. So that's tacit agreement that any kind of microplastics are not good for you. Otherwise, why would you ban them?
Okay. All right. So what's that website again you were talking about?
Onropes.co.uk. They are the, I think they're the European leader in. If you look at the pictures, you see them rappelling up and down these 200-foot blades, basically sanding them and then refilling the interior core where they've gone. And it's some of the pictures that you see, if you look close up, you know, the leading edge of the blade is, it looks like a Rottweiler's taken a big chomp out of it. And you've got to wonder, where is that gone? You know, you know, the flat surface, where is that then? If there's no microplastics, it's got to be somewhere. And that's, you know, the reports from the Swedish study, the Danish studies, they're all saying around 62 kilos per year per turbine, or per blade, I think it was. So if you multiply that up to several turbines, then you think you've got the source of the Colby Rivers right next to Eriestein, and you've got lots of farmland. So you've got to wonder.
Okay, I appreciate that, Julian. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. 4 minutes now before one, that's about it. If nicotine cigarettes are slowly being forced out of society, says Mark, what's the sense in legalising cannabis? Cannabis smoking is more harmful than nicotine smoking. The concentrations found in cigarettes, particularly for those aged under 25, it clearly makes no sense to legalise cannabis. Every state in the US and Canada that's legalised it, Netherlands and Portugal, all want to turn the clock back. Every society that's legalised cannabis has deteriorated as a result. The chief constable has come from Yorkshire, which has an even bigger problem than we do, and that's saying something. He knows what the harm that cannabis does, says Mark. Listen to the chief constable. Thanks for Howie Kane on the phone today. Back tomorrow. WINT.